Herzlich willkommen zu unserem FKA Mobility Podcast. Als Partner der Automobilindustrie erarbeitet die FKA innovative Lösungen und bietet strategische Beratung rund um das Kraftfahrzeug. Wir sind Forschungseinrichtung, kreativer Ideengeber und Innovationstreiber. Mein Name ist Kerstin und ich arbeite im Team Marketing und Kommunikation bei der FKA.
Creating ideas and driving innovations. FKA.
Welcome to episode number 27 of our FKA Mobility Podcast. A little heads up, today we are going to talk in English for the first time since we have an international guest here. Sustainability is a topic which is gaining more and more relevance and we encounter it in many fields. Also in the field of mobility, there are many aspects to consider when talking about sustainability. For example, the propulsion systems and the emission. But sometimes we forget the actual material of the vehicle and the production itself. So today in the podcast we are going to focus on this part of sustainability in the automotive value chain. So when we're looking at the vehicle, usually a major part is made out of steel. So it's logical that today we talk with a steel expert about this topic. And I'm very happy that Sander Heinhuis is joining us today here. He is head of marketing automotive from the company Tata Steel, which is one of the largest steel producers in Europe. Goedemorgen naar Nederland and welcome by onze podcast, Sander. But let's talk in English today so everybody can understand our conversation. Sander, can you tell us more about the company Tata Steel?
Guten Morgen, Kerstin. Thank you very much for having me in this podcast. Absolutely. So let me first briefly introduce Tata Steel. Tata Steel Europe is part of the Tata Steel Group. As you said, we are one of the larger global steel producers in the world with major steel producing locations in India, the UK, but also Holland. We are a large supplier of advanced steels for many applications, also automotive, for body in white, chassis, seating applications, but of course also looking forward to electrical vehicles. We make electrical steels for electric motors and specialty plated products for cylindrical lithium-ion battery cells. So all in all, a large offering for our automotive market. Personally, I am responsible for marketing, which includes in Tata Steel being responsible for the development of new products, services and value propositions. And not surprisingly, as we will discuss today, sustainability is a really relevant part of that.
Yeah, nice that you're here today. I'm already curious about all your insights. And my second guest today can tell us more about the research perspective of this topic. Welcome, Dinesh Tiranavukarasu, Manager Research Area Vehicle Structures, from our cooperation partner, the Institute of Automotive Engineering of the RWTH Aachen University. Dinesh, what does your research area include?
Hello, Kerstin, and thank you very much for your invitation today. Yes, as you indicated, I am managing the research area vehicle structures here at IKA. And to shortly describe our daily research work that we are dealing with, we are basically responsible for the surrounding shell of vehicles and mainly take care that they are safe, as light as possible, and of course sustainable. This requires the application of innovative material and manufacturing technologies according to the specific requirement of each component in the structure. We ourselves work quite intensively within the field of sustainability because the structure has a high overall mass share in the vehicle, and our target is to apply a material concept in an efficient manner to reduce the environmental impact throughout all life cycle phases to an absolute minimum.
Yeah, great that we can combine both views here today, the automotive research perspective and the actual steel production. To start, Dinesh, can you tell us more about today's topic in general? What does actually sustainability in the automotive value chain mean?
Well, when we talk about sustainability, it is often limited to the reduction of the carbon footprint. But we have to say it is more than that. It is about taking over social responsibility towards the environment and mankind. If we want to further concretize, the United Nations have defined 17 global goals for sustainable development, which besides reducing the environmental impact also include goals like, for example, the reduction of poverty and hunger, quality education and gender equality. So all industries over the world need to commit themselves to these sustainability goals in order to improve the living standard of every individual. When we are trying to transfer this approach to the automotive industry, we need to have a detailed look into the entire automotive value chain. This includes the extraction of raw materials, the production of the vehicles, the use, and of course the recycling.
And what would you say are the major challenging factors, key players in the automotive value chain when implementing these sustainability goals?
Well, if you have a look from an OEM perspective, it is first of all necessary to understand where every single component of the vehicle comes from, which suppliers are involved in the manufacturing process, and how raw materials are extracted. Based on that information, you have to question yourself if your sustainability targets are achieved over the value chain or you need to optimize. A typical example would be to make sure that in the rising electric vehicles market, the raw materials for batteries, like for example cobalt, are extracted in a responsible manner. But also the carbon neutral extraction of raw materials and production of components plays a decisive role. Since most countries committed themselves to the Parisian Climate Agreement to limit the global warming. And this is, of course, one of the biggest challenges in the automotive value chain. From a supplier and also an OEM perspective, it is necessary to overthink the processes, the actual material and energy flows within the entire value chain to reduce the carbon footprint to an absolute minimum.
So there's a lot to consider when talking about sustainability. Let's talk about the steel production. What aspects does Tata Steel take into account in its sustainability agenda?
Yeah, thank you for the question. And Dinesh has already rightfully referred to the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. These are really important, and also the Tata Steel Group fully subscribes to these. We have for ourselves translated that into a sustainability agenda, and there are three pillars which I think which are relevant to share here in this conversation. The first one is that we want to be a responsible producer, which includes working with responsible suppliers. The second is decarbonization, or very simply put, taking carbon emissions out of our production processes. And the third one is circularity. We need to make sure that our products are and continue to be part of a circular economy in the most effective and efficient way as possible.
When we're going back now to the automotive world, Dinesh, what are the major adjusting layers you see towards carbon neutral mobility?
I think this question needs to be answered holistically. Well, let's start at the use phase. Of course, when you look at the use phase, the vehicles should be as efficient as possible and build up on energy sources with a low environmental impact. For combustion engines, this can be achieved by the use of biofuels. If we talk about battery electric vehicles, the electricity mix should come from renewable energy sources like wind or solar energy. When we consider the end-of-life phase, manufacturers should make sure that vehicles are designed for recycling. This means that components can be dismantled and sorted homogeneously. Afterwards, they should either be recyclable or find their way into a second-use application. The carbon footprint in the production phase can be influenced by taking the right material and manufacturing choice. Especially in the field of material technologies, there are currently a lot of efforts going on to reduce the impact generated in the material production. Here, steel, aluminum, plastics, and other lightweight materials take over a decisive role. Over 50% of the material content of nowadays vehicles, for example, is made out of steel. Further decreasing the global warming potential of steel products can therefore be an adjusting lever to further reduce the carbon footprint.
And that brings us to the question, which measures does Tata Steel actually implement to further decarbonize the steel production?
One cannot imagine a world without steel. We use steel every day in our household, in our work, and when traveling. It is the most commonly used engineering material in the world. Yet, today, steel is responsible for about 8% of all greenhouse gas emissions in the world. And hence, there is a significant responsibility upon the steel industry to address this. But the use of steel isn't really optional. But how we do it has many options. Today, Tata Steel is already amongst the most carbon-efficient steel producers in the world. And we have set ambitious targets for ourselves to further reduce our greenhouse gas emissions by 30% by 2030 and be carbon neutral by 2050. At Tata Steel, we believe there is not one silver bullet, but it is about a portfolio of technological options. We need a portfolio because not all options will be available in the same moment in time. Some need further development, or some are dependent on boundary conditions, such as, for instance, the availability of competitive and significant volumes of renewable energy. And hence, you need to work on a portfolio of options because different solutions will play different roles in different moments in time. But also, what is the best solution for one steelmaking site is not necessarily the best solution for another steelmaking site. Okay, to make it concrete, let me describe two parallel paths that we are working on. First, I'll talk a bit about how we are going to change from blast furnace technology to direct reduction technology, and then on the parallel path, I will describe how we are working with hydrogen. Okay, so let's first start with our blast furnace technology, which we use today, and how that will further develop. So currently, blast furnaces are used to extract iron from iron ore, and we do that on the basis of coal, and that is resulting in the greenhouse gas emissions. Okay, so we have plans in place to not emit those carbon emissions, but to capture them and store them in empty gas fields in the North Sea. This is a relatively mature technology, which can also be applied to the steel industry. And in November, we've announced plans to actually develop the world's largest carbon capture installation. That installation will play a very significant role to achieve our first objective to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions by 30% by 2030. We can also do something else. We can also just not capture it and store it. We can capture it and then turn it into useful chemical products for industrial clusters nearby. Okay, but so far, I've still spoken about blast furnace technology and then capturing the carbon emissions. What we can also do is progress the blast furnace technology to a new technology, which is called in the industry a direct reduction technology. It is a more carbon efficient way to extract iron from iron ore. The benefit is it's not only just more carbon efficient, it also has the potential to not work with coal, but with natural gas, or in the end, hydrogen. Well, and I already promised you that I would speak about hydrogen as well. So let's now talk about the second parallel path, which is the hydrogen path, and which is strongly interrelated with the other path that I've just spoken about. So we are convinced that hydrogen will play an important role in future steelmaking processes. And therefore, we are working with partners, such as, for instance, the Port of Amsterdam and Nouryon, to look at the development and construction of a large electrolyzer to make hydrogen. So a 100 megawatt electrolyzer that could be built on our premises, on our steelmaking site in Holland. In the shortest term, this hydrogen could be used in our blast furnace to substitute partially the use of coal, but also can play a role in what I've described earlier, which is capturing the carbon emissions and then turning the captured gases into useful chemical products. Later on, this hydrogen can play a role in the direct reduction process that I've described earlier. Okay, so why do we see this roadmap? Because also hydrogen has a roadmap of itself, because the technology is not necessarily mature and ready to be implemented at this moment in time.
But also for this to really work, when you take the total associated emissions into account, you need to work with green hydrogen, or hydrogen produced with the use of renewable energy. Because if you would use, let's say, gray hydrogen, and you take the overall associated emissions into account, the targeted decarbonization effect is not necessarily achieved.
Well, and in order to make hydrogen available on a scale competitively, that it can be used for large-scale
steel production, you need to have much more renewable energy available than that it is available today. And hence, we do not necessarily see that as a solution for the 2020s, but for the 2030s. So either our hydrogen roadmap starts soon, but for use in the steel production processes and not yet as a complete displacement for let's say, carbon-based solutions, as that will be in the 2030s. So all in all, a significant portfolio, and Tata Steel will be amongst the first steel producers in the world, but also in Europe, to be able to reduce its greenhouse gas emissions by 30% in 2030. And to give you a feel, if we would on our site in Holland reduce our greenhouse gas emissions by 30%, that would equate enough steel to make more than 1 million cars a year made from carbon neutral steel.
I think it's very interesting to see that you at Tata Steel are working on different solutions at the same time. And I think you made the point clear that steel is very essential for many industries and also for the automotive industry. So now when we're talking about the market demands in the interplay with the legislative framework, how do you see that in regard to decarbonization?
Yeah, there is a strong interplay between the legislative framework for carbon emissions and for market demand. And both are necessary, both go hand in hand. Let me start to explain the legislative framework for carbon emissions. And then I need to talk about ETS. ETS stands for Emissions Trading System. It is the first of its kind on such a large scale in the world. The emissions trading system applies to steel, but equally to aluminium, to cement, to glass, etc. In total, it covers 11,000 installations, which collectively emit 40% of all greenhouse gas emissions in Europe. And this system creates incentives for the European industry to take carbon emissions out of their processes. And maybe I can briefly explain it as follows. If you have carbon emissions, you need to have the rights for those carbon emissions under the ETS system. And partially these rights you get from the European Union in the form of free allocations, but these are not sufficient to completely cover your emissions. So you need to buy additional rights in order to cover the full rights that you require. And there are two levers. One, the free rights that you get, the so-called free allowances that you get, are diminishing over time. But also the value of the CO2 rights that you need to buy in order to cover the gap, that the value of those CO2 rights are increasing over time. And hence, those two factors combined make that there's a strong incentive for the European industry to decarbonize. And it is working. For instance, the value of carbon rights have gone up by 80% in the past 2 years. And since the start of ETS, so the start was in 2005, from 2005 to 2019, these collective industries have emitted 35% less in Europe. So it is a powerful legislative framework, and it does what it needs to do. However, steel is also a material which is traded, also traded between regions in the world. And there is a concern, because Europe is the first to implement such a scheme on such a scale, this is not necessarily applied elsewhere in the world. And hence, there is a disturbance of what you could call a level playing field. So Europe, in exports and imports, is dealing with regions in the world where there is less cost associated with carbon, and hence you can compete with products which are more carbon intense but have a lower cost structure. Well, that is to be addressed, and also the European Union has also understood that it needs to be addressed and is looking at a so-called carbon border adjustment mechanism. That is a mechanism which would trigger a tariff when steel with a higher carbon intensity is imported in Europe, and then a tax will be applied to restore this level playing field. Okay, so that was the legislative framework part of your question. Now let's go towards the market. The market is increasingly asking for low carbon products or for even for carbon neutral products. And that is good because low carbon steels, carbon neutral steels, may be the same as conventional steels from an engineering perspective, but not from a societal perspective. And hence, the market needs to understand that when asking new demands, additional new demands, that it also needs to be expressed in a premium. Now, the market is realizing that more and more. We see that the awareness is growing, and that is good because then we create a market pull in addition to the legislation push. And both are needed, and both need to go hand in hand.
So that means the European industries are already working together to working on a more sustainability industry. We said that at the very beginning, a major advantage of the steel production is the recyclability. So how does the circularity contribute to the carbon reduction? What would you say, Sander?
Yes, definitely. There is a clear relationship. So once iron has been extracted from iron ore, it is there to serve society for many generations to come. You could argue steel is a permanent material. It is used, but never consumed. Steel always comes back. So just to give you a feel, if you use steel to make a beverage can, it may be recycled within 6 months. If you use steel to make a car, it can be recycled in 15 years. If you use steel in a building, it may be recycled in 50 years. But one thing is for sure, steel will return to the overall steel pool in the world, and it will be used again and again for generations to come. So how is this important from a decarbonization perspective? Well, 2 points are really relevant here. One is remelting steel into new steel only requires a small amount of the energy related to extracting iron from iron ore. So it is much more energy efficient and therefore also more carbon emissions efficient. The second thing is that steel is very well recyclable. You can actually use it again and again without loss of quality. And it is very valuable. Therefore, there are very efficient scrip distribution networks, which allow for a very efficient recycling and reuse. Those are really two important benefits and credentials of steel. Also in Tata Steel, we embrace scrap-based steelmaking in our future production scenarios. So a few moments ago, I have explained how our portfolio of technological options, what that looks like for iron ore-based steelmaking, but we are very much on board to also include more scrap-based steelmaking in our roadmap in the future. But it has to be said, scrap-based steelmaking will always be in addition to what we would call virgin steelmaking. And that is because the overall steel demand in the world is growing and continues to grow. So if you would look today you could only satisfy 40% of the total steel demand in the world from scrap. And forecasts indicate that that's only still 60% by 2050. So yes, scrap is a very powerful decarbonization lever, yet the world doesn't have enough scrap to be able to satisfy all demand, and hence virgin steel needs to continue to be produced in the future as well. So both technologies are relevant, and we need to make virgin iron and virgin steel with as little emissions as possible, but also we need to have very good steel recycling based production methods where we really continue to have the quality of the steel and make high performance steels out of previous high performance steels.
So you're working on both recycling and producing virgin steel at the same time. That's interesting. How does the supply chain transparency look like then?
Supply chain transparency is really important. So as a consumer, we want to buy a product that is a responsible product. Not only we want to buy that from a shop that is responsible, the product needs to be produced from a responsible supply chain, really from the start up to the moment that you buy it in the shop or you buy your car from a dealership. So Let them briefly mention, what does responsibility mean over a value chain or over a supply chain? Well, for us, it would mean that everybody who's been involved in the production of the materials has been able to work in safe working conditions and with appropriate ethical standards, for instance, and absolutely free from child labor and, for instance, free from trading with conflict areas. Some of these elements have already been referred to by Dinesh earlier in the conversation today. Tata Steel holds itself accountable to the highest ethical standards. We do that to ourselves, but we also ask that from our suppliers. And certification can play a meaningful role here. In 2020, therefore, Tata Steel has become a business member of Responsible Steel. Thereby, we are the second global steel mill in the world to become a member. Responsible Steel is a sustainability standards organization that will develop, that is developing, sustainability and responsibility standards. And we see that as a meaningful way to drive, further drive responsibility across our whole value chain. But in the end, you cannot only rely on certification. It is also about working together between suppliers and customers. And therefore, we also have a due diligence approach with our suppliers, where we both review situations, identify areas for improvement, and jointly work on that.
All right. I think during our conversation, we learned a lot about the steel market. You told us many insights. But now, coming to the end, what would you say the steel market is looking like in the next 10 to 20 years?
I think it's going to be a very exciting future for our market. And not only in 10 to 20 years, but already within this next decade. So today we have extensively spoken about decarbonization and thereby the production and availability of low carbon steels. And that will open up a whole new market. Where today, steel requirements are, for instance, about strength, formability, surface quality, it will now also be about the associated emissions when actually producing the steel. So that means we will have new product lines. We will have low carbon steel product lines. And our customers will be able to be first movers in those fields. We see a significant interest, especially of so-called brand owner customers. And of course, the automotive industry has very strong brands and brand owners within them. So that for sure will be one really important aspect of changes. But the second one is about Industry 4.0. Today, we are selling steel. I'm personally convinced that in the next decade, we will also start to sell data in addition to our steel. Data which will facilitate the processing of steel, which will support the traceability of steel through a value chain. Today, in today's steelmaking processes, we are already taking the benefits of Industry 4.0 initiatives, but I'm personally also convinced that we will see that increasingly between suppliers and customers in the supply chain as well. So many things to come, not just incremental changes. That's what makes it so interesting. These are really transitions. We will make it happen collectively. The automotive industry and the steel industry have already jointly been successful for 100 years. And I'm sure that together we will be successful for another 100.
Good to hear that you have a rather positive outlook of the steel market in the future. How do you see the market for the automotive industry, Dinesh, in the next years?
Well, of course, when we are talking about decarbonization in the automotive industry, we will also see the policies changing in the upcoming years. There are currently discussions going on that foster the implementation of a holistic life cycle assessment instead of an isolated assessment of the use phase, like it is the case at the moment. By 2023, the European Commission will evaluate the possibility of developing a common methodology for the assessment and reporting of the full life cycle CO2 emissions for cars and vans. So at the current stage, it is not mandatory to consider the full life cycle. Nevertheless, we are quite happy to see that the industry is already one step ahead and commits itself to sustainability targets on a voluntary basis.
So exciting times for both industries in the upcoming years. We'll come to the end of this podcast episode. As a conclusion, we can say that sustainability in the automotive value chain can be improved in many different ways, from the production over usage to recycling of the vehicle. The steel production plays an important role here, and in order to produce more sustainable, one way is to cut carbon emissions out of the production process, and at the same time using the advantage of steel, which is that it can be recycled. Therefore, it's very important that European industries work closely together. In the conversation, it became clear that this is a very current topic at the moment. A lot will change in the next years, also influenced by new European policies, and that will probably also change the mindsets of producers and users. If you want to know more about the company Tata Steel, then have a look in the show notes. Yeah, Dinesh and Sander, thank you for being part of our podcast today and for giving us all these insights about this very important topic, which will influence the mobility of the future.
Thank you, Kirsten.
Thank you, Kirsten and Dinesh.
Creating ideas and driving innovations. FKR.